Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the latest edition of the First Arm Snapcast. I'm your host, Richard Butler, and joining me tonight is regular analyst Charles Clawson and a special guest tonight joining us from America's Super Bowl 45 winner, Jarrett Bush of the Green Bay, former of the Green Bay Packers. How's everyone doing?
Doing great.
Good, thanks.
Obviously, Jarrett, it's great to have you on the show tonight and taking up some time out of your busy life at the moment. Obviously, I know you've just had a Memorial Day weekend. Has that been all good for you?
Yeah, everything's real good. Just got a good night's sleep, and it's a beautiful day outside, and just looking forward to, you know, getting outside with my kiddos, and my oldest has a softball game later on today, so I look forward to seeing that, and just enjoying the Memorial Day weekend, celebrating the military and the sacrifices and dedication that they gave and to honor this weekend.
Excellent. So let's get straight into it now, Jared. So, you're a Californian boy and attended, might say this wrong, Vacaville CA Wood High School, is that correct?
Yeah, Vacaville and mostly Wood High School, yes.
And you played both wide receiver and defensive back that during your time at high school. Was there a position you preferred? Was it defensive always, or did you enjoy being a bit of a wide receiver? Were you a bit fast at that?
Yeah, back then? Definitely enjoyed both. Receiver, I always looked up to Jerry Rice and Michael Irvin because of they were the glory position. They were very much a highlight position, as well as very animated characters. The work ethic of Jerry Rice, and as well as the work ethic of Michael Irvin, definitely show, and I could relate a lot. And you know, when they made plays, it definitely, like, they loved to celebrate, and it was something that. It definitely, you saw their work ethic, and you saw the rewards show through that whole process. So,
yeah, definitely two characters. I've been to an NFL UK event in the UK. Michael Irvin was one of the guests, and he's definitely a character.
Yeah, he is. He's definitely has a lot of enthusiasm, and it definitely played a huge role into his football and as well as his success. Right, throughout some of the failures and. Some of the struggles, he never lost that enthusiasm. I think it plays a huge role in his commentating now.
Yeah, he's definitely one of the more passionate commentators, I believe, an analyst out there as well. When you see him on a show, you want to listen to everything he's got to say. As much as animated of all his arm movements,
right?
He speaks a good point normally.
He does.
I've got a question to ask about the fact that is it quite unusual to get to the level that you did and still be a wide receiver stroke defensive back? Because they seem, like, to me, mutually exclusive.
Say that again. What was the question?
Well, to get to the position you did when you're playing in the NFL,
uh-huh.
and you've got the ability to be a wide receiver or a defensive back.
Yeah.
Is that a blessing, or does it make it harder for you when you're actually starting to play?
It was definitely a blessing because you understood the offensive side of the ball, and so you were able to kind of turn around and like, okay, this is what I'm trying to defend. This is as a receiver, knowing what route I want, how I want to manipulate the defensive back to get what I want, so the quarterback can throw me the ball. Understanding what the quarterback sees as well was huge, just because you're on the offensive side of the ball before you switch over. And so I think just one of the key factors of being the defensive back was understanding that you're playing backwards, knowing that they're trying to get behind you and knowing how to defend that. But with my athleticism already kind of just being blessed and just kind of honing that skill and making sure just I was able to understand the full grasp mindset of being the defensive back, which allowed me to kind of excel. Basically knowing what the defense, knowing where my help was behind me, the safety is crucial when you're a corner and you're out there by yourself one-on-one on the island. And so knowing where your help is was huge, as well as some of the linebackers and knowing what their job entailed. And then just go out there and play ball at the end of the day, knowing that the ball was up in the air is that you want to be greedy, go up and get the ball type mentality. Just like you're going to get a rebound in the basketball game and bring it down. You know, you definitely have to be greedy out there when the ball's out in the air. But it definitely, when my coach asked me to switch, I was kind of like, what are you talking about? You know, like, man, I'm a receiver. Like, I'm, you know, trying to be like Jerry Rice, Michael Irvin. And he was like, JB, you know, I was short for Jared Bush. And he was like, you know, receivers are now like 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", nowadays. And he was like, well, defensive backs, right, they're a little bit shorter. They tend to be, the tendency is where they're 5'7", 5'8", 5'9", and you're 6 foot. And so being a 6 foot corner, you know, a lot of scouts and college scouts were looking for that 6 foot corner to match up against that 6'5", 6'4" receiver, just a better matchup. And so it seemed to work out. You know, I listened to my mentors and making a career move and decision, and you know, they were right, man. I got to hand it to them, Coach Lawrence and some of my coaches. They were right, and I'm so glad and blessed that they steered me the right direction to guide me to be able to play in the NFL and you know, to have this platform now today.
But if we're being honest, it sounds like you were a little bit disappointed at first.
I was because even though it wasn't the exact route that I wanted to go, I think it was a little bit selfish. Understand in the sense of like knowing what this is what Jarrett wanted to do versus like this is what the gift has of the blessing that he's trying to give you. Maybe it's not the exact direction that you want to go, but it's just like kind of this altered path, you know, of getting to where I wanted to go. And that's okay. You know, at the end of the day, I helped my parents out financially with getting a scholarship, and as well as, you know, being employed and playing for the Green Bay Packers, and again, making a great living. And just knowing that I'm on my feet and able to provide for my family. And I think that's a blessing in itself. And knowing that you meet some great people along the way, great coaches to help you mentor and keep you focused. And you can't be disappointed after that when you start seeing some of the directions and seeing the blessings that he puts you in and some of the areas and the situations and the environment that he puts you in. I think when you look at the blessings and you look at Joseph of the Bible, right? I'm pretty sure Joseph was pretty disappointed when he fell into the pit or when he was in prison, right? But ultimately, when he came out of it, right, he came second tier to the right to the Pharaoh and oversaw everything, the agriculture, the architect, everything. And so I think that's where the faith comes in, you know, just understand and trust the process, trust the journey that he puts you in. Is it all going to be happy and glitz and glamour? No, but at the end of the day, there's going to be so much more reward there and so much joy because you went through that, right? Because it's a process. It's taken through a process, and you don't recognize it when you're in it, but when you come out of it, it's definitely worth it. So I think just sticking to it and understanding there's a greater purpose behind it was, I think, the lesson to learn there.
That's a fantastic outlook you've got, because I know that some players have been a bit like divas. you know, yeah. And they'd be stamping the feet and saying, I am going to be a wide receiver.
Right. Yeah,
so, definitely. So it's good. That's very well explained, actually. I like that.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Yeah, so that's okay.
Going back, obviously, after high school, you went to Utah, obviously, to the draft came in 2006. Now, obviously, the draft came, unfortunately, you went undrafted. Yeah. How did that feel at the time when you, obviously, everyone expects to go in one of the rounds? How was that emotion at the time when you didn't get picked?
Yeah, that was a lot of anxiety on draft day. I'm not going to lie. That was a lot. I definitely feel that you hang on your word of your agent and what the scouts are telling him and where you fall within the slots of the draft. My agent, Derek Fox, at the time, he was telling me that I was going to be from the fourth round to being undrafted. And while you're sitting getting drafted, you see some of the players that you've seen that line up with the same attributes as you, whether it's height, weight, 40, the stats on the stat sheet and where you fall in that realm. And I definitely feel that I was in amongst of the top echelon of those other defensive backs. And it was just frustrating since knowing that you're in the same category as this guy, even though this guy's getting drafted in the second, third round. So this huge chip on your shoulders became the raise up, knowing that, okay, when I do get my shot, I'm going to let everybody know that even though I went to a less competitive school, I went to Utah State, which is still Division I, but it's not like your Clemson, your Texas, your Florida States. So I think you get kind of knocked on the competition level. So therefore, you know, the investment level, I guess, goes down because of that competition level. Unfortunately, that's just kind of the way the business goes. So, but when I did get my opportunity and I signed undrafted to Carolina, I walked in with a huge chip on my shoulder, knowing that I was going to make these guys know who Jared Bush was at the training camp. And I did. And so when I walked in signing, I ended up signing a $20,000 contract. It was basically like a prioritized free agent and one of the top free agent guys that they signed. And when I walked in that first day to training camp, I was kind of just at awe when you walk in with John Fox, Keyshawn Johnson, the Raging Cajun, quarterback, I forgot his name, but Steve Smith. And there's a ton of guys that you looked up to and you're kind of at awe. And right. But then once you understood, like, hey, man, I belong here. I belong to be in this group of epsilon players and this fine group of men that are playing football. And once I felt that sense of belonging, I mean, it was just a matter of time, just me getting opportunity and showing what I could do. But there was definitely a lot of anxiety leading up to that point because you wanted to prove your support system, your family, your friends, your community, that, you know, that you've been recognized on a national level, you know, being selected at a draft pick. And there was some disappointment, but I was relieved that even just that I had a next step. I had a next opportunity, and they called me, the Carolina Panthers, and they said the contract and I signed it, and away I went. You know, I started going to work, started going through drills and staying in shape and making sure that I was ready for training camp.
Yeah, you were saying some big names in Carolina. There was a certain defensive Julius Peppers there. Did he have any words of advice when you went through the doors?
No, he was really a quiet guy, man. He was really a quiet dude.
He wasn't quiet on the field.
He wasn't quiet on the field. He sure wasn't. I mean, he was a monster on the field, man. He was a beast. But he did lead by example. I think that's one thing, even though he didn't talk very much. He led by example, by the way he carried himself, the way he led, he led his team, and especially in crucial situations on the football field where he would bring along his teammates, like, come on, like, let's go, like, follow me, like, this is how we're going to get, we're going to get to the promised land. And kind of a short story, like, so he definitely set the bar in, like, productions as well. And so in the training camp, there's a production list, right? Like, it was, like, tackles, PBUs, force fumbles, fumble recoveries, down the list. And by the end of training camp, I was second on the on the production list behind Julius Peppers. And so I was like, okay, I'm not upset with that. I'm not upset with that at all, because being an undrafted free agent and being out a lot of the other draft picks, I think that was a huge accomplishment. And I think, well, no one can ever take that away from me, and I always remember that. And I ended up being released at the end of training camp anyways. They tried to put me on practice squad, and Green Bay picked me up, and here I am. Here I am today. In Green Bay, I still reside here, and it's where I raised my family. So it's, again, a blessing. Again, like, in through that disappointment of being released and being cut, I was very disappointed, because I had such a close bond with the Carolina Panthers and the players, and and I wanted to be a Panther. And so it was this, like, nope, this is not the direction. We're going to take you again in another direction, but still the direction that you want to go. But we're just going to just take this altered direction, and I'm going to give you more. I'm going to give you more than what you're asking. And so I think that, again, that blessing, you know, was definitely in disguise. I had no idea where Green Bay was. And when I landed, I just knew that they played football. And again, the blessing took off again. So, again, just the lesson, man, just stick to it, and understand that there's better to come out of it, and just persevere and just be ready for your opportunity. You know?
Yeah.
Richard, I've just got to say quickly, I hope if you didn't know where Green Bay was, I hope you packed a big coat.
So I did have a few coats, just being playing in Utah State. Utah State was definitely a cold state to play, and so I was definitely I was groomed and pruned playing that cold weather. So and then as soon as I landed, yes, I did. I brought me a nice big parka jacket, starter jacket, and I was ready to roll. I was ready to roll. So you know, playing in front of Lambeau Field and Packer fans was it's a huge treat. And then playing with Brett Favre, which is a Hall of Fame name, that was a great treat. And then as well as playing with Aaron Rodgers again, playing with two Hall of Fame quarterbacks. I mean, there's nothing that could beat that. And playing in the great city of Green Bay.
Since you mentioned Favre and Rodgers, I've got to ask you the question. Who was better? Who do you think was better?
You know what?
Sorry to put you on the spot.
No, yeah, no, it's tough. It's tough to say, because we were actually looking at the stats the other day, and I want to say Aaron Rodgers beats out Brett Favre with three MVPs. I think Brett has one, and the same amount of Super Bowls, and so they're kind of neck and neck. If you count the MVPs, you got to give it to A-Rod.
Yeah.
I think Brett definitely had a different connection with the fans just because of who he was than A-Rod does. I definitely just feel that in the air with the fans and just the connection with the two. But if you amount just the talent and the skill level, I think if you look at the skill level, I think A-Rod is definitely a little bit more refined. You know, you can't take away Brett's ability just because he left it all out there. And that's what you ask for, a gladiator, a warrior mentality. But A-Rod, I think, definitely feel that he's a little bit more refined. He throws a little bit tighter ball. But I think at the end of the day, as a player, it's a win-win. It's a win-win. You know, it's like a pick-your-poison type quarterback. Or A-Rod, we feel comfortable with either one. We're going to go win, and we're going to be a Super Bowl contender. So
I was just going to say, you talk about being blessed. I mean, there's not many people who have played with two top-level quarterbacks like you have.
Yeah.
So it's not a bad start.
Yeah, and it's such a treat to be able just to rub elbows and to have conversations and be in the same breathing airspace as those two, you know. You know, it's definitely a treat, and you always remember those moments, and you always get to tell those stories of, you know, locker room jokes and just roaming the hallways with those two Hall of Famers. And again, those are experiences that are once in a lifetime that only a few people get to experience. And you take those experiences and you hold on to them, you cherish them, you talk about them, and you definitely learn a lot from how they handle themselves again. And not only them, like Donald Driver, Charles Woodson, Al Harris, there's so many more down the list that you learn from, as well as those two prolific quarterbacks.
I was just going to say.
It's also a very difficult question to answer as well.
It is.
They are slightly different eras and the game's changing all the time.
Yeah, it is. And, right, I looked at Brett when he was in the back end of his career. I saw A-Rod in the front end of his career, you know, as well as like in the meat potatoes as well. So I'm not sure if it's fair to say because I never saw him in his early years. You know, I saw him when he was 38, 39, 40. You know, who knows when he was 23, 24, did he look different? I don't know, you know. So it's a tough question to say. As a player that's suiting up with the same jersey as him, I'm like, hey, A-Rod, Brett, let's go. Let's go win a football game. Let's go win a Super Bowl, you know.
Good.
You alluded to there, obviously, there was a certain Charles Woodson playing cornerback when you arrived in Green Bay. So, like you say, Hall of Famers and people to look up to, role models. Charles was definitely up there in the opposition.
Yeah. Charles Woodson, again, changing the position of a complete corner, understanding that you're able to cover any receiver out there as well as hit like a linebacker. I think that was a type of mentality that he definitely took. And it would just create this ripple effect of that mentality. You know, you cover any receiver on the football field, but you hit like a linebacker. And we definitely took a lot of pride in that, and we took charge of that room and made sure that every cornerback tried to hit that standard. And it definitely raised the level of that room to be better, you know, to not only hit and tackle those running backs, but as well as cover the elite. And, it definitely played a huge role in our success. And so, again, it was an honor and a privilege to walk amongst and to wear the same jersey as he did at the same time playing on that football field and working together for a common goal.
Yeah, I think how you already answered the question so far, Jarrett, it sort of totally sums up what I've read. So yeah. I was reading that during your time at Green Bay, you were the third choice cornerback and you were on special teams, but you never got unhappy about that position or that role because it was, again, working for the team in that end goal that you've set your journey on all the way back at high school through your roadblocks and your collisions.
Yeah.
And it's still that end goal was that I'm a team player. I'm here to win for Green Bay. It's not individual.
Correct. Agreed. Yeah. It's, it was funny. We were talking about that the other day with my dad. We were at breakfast and when I signed the Green Bay, I was again that disappointment because when I signed the Green Bay, the Packers were 4-12 that last season. And so that's just digressing throughout my high school career, we didn't win much. You know, we went like, 3-7, 2-8, again, like, 4-6, we didn't win much. And so understanding when I got to the NFL, I was like, okay, it's time to win. It's time to turn the tables. Like, I've taken enough L's, I've learned to lose. It's time to win, right? You've learned how to lose, and now it's time to turn the tables and let's get to the Super Bowl. And I thought being in the NFL, playing at that top level, I was going to give me the chance to do that. And playing with the Hall of Fame quarterback, Brett Favre, as well as A-Rod, was going to give me the opportunity. And I'm so glad that I stuck it through, I kept going. And again, playing with those top players like Charles Woodson, Al Harris, Ryan Pickett, I can't talk enough, A.J. Hawk, Clay Matthews, B.J. Raji, Tremont Williams. There's so many names I'm probably not naming. Greg Jennings, Donald Driver, Jermichael Finley, James Jones, Jordy Nelson. I mean, all those guys were a huge factor into that team. Ryan Grant, I think he was on the injured list. Nick Barnett, I think, again, he was on the injured list, but he still was a crucial part to the team. And then Ted Thompson, right, just bringing me in and trusting my abilities and seeing my resilience and understanding that I came to win. So, again, huge blessing and just, was grateful for the opportunity just to play for the Packers.
Yeah, that play to win came to fruition in Super Bowl 45 when your big moment came. Charles Woodson broke his collarbone, I believe, in first quarter. And it was like, right, come on, Jarrett, you're on.
Yeah.
And effectively, in that second quarter, you read probably that most pivotal play of the game of a Roethlisberger's pass. You intercepted it, and then literally the next drive, Rodgers played you downfield to score. So how did that read? Did it just come to you? Did you see it happening in front of you? It was.
Yeah, I saw it the night before the game, actually, you know, if you want me to be honest.
And you're studying.
Yeah, studying the film. And it's funny because I missed it during practice. And the route just crossed my face. It just zoomed. I was like, oh, man, that was it. Okay. And so when I got in the game, it slowed down. The game just slowed down. I was like, okay, this is it. All you got to do is just bait the quarterback a little bit. And then when it comes across, flashes your face, go get it. And so I did just that, and I'm just blessed again that Dom called that play call for me to go get the ball. Because if he calls a man to man defense, I don't make that play. And so I think it's, again, just huge credit to him. Kind of just everything, just trickle down effect of just the blessing of allowing everything to happen. And yeah. You know, I still imagine holding that ball and feeling the laces and getting up with this roar of just emotion because of just proving some of those doubters and understanding that I'm a winner, you know, and that I proved some of the doubters that, you know, that felt like that I couldn't do it and publicly put it out there that I couldn't do it. And so it's definitely a monkey that jumps.
It erased that chip off the shoulder from not being drafted anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Prove so, I'm here.
Yeah, I have arrived, you know. And it's just, I mean, when I think about it, it just makes me smile. And just it's just like walking on water, man. And but again, I'm just so thankful again to help my team get the turnover. And we're able to capitalize on those points, you know, opportunistically. And A-Rod throws, I believe, two more touchdowns after that, you know, to seal the victory for the Super Bowl. And, you know, we brought home the Super Bowl to Tattletown.
Did the coach or any of the players have anything special to say to you after you'd done that, if you can remember?
No, I just remember telling my coach, man, like, I told you, man, yeah. I can do it. I can do it, man. I told you. And I just hugged my coach after the Super Bowl, man. I was just so emotional because of the prior experiences of losing and the losses and some of the struggles and this those tribulations and the hardship and the hard works, the late nights and the early mornings and the dreams and the nightmares of, you know, the fears of failure and the risk. And you just kind of just lay there exhausted and just in triumph. And it's such an emotional, overwhelming feeling.
You might have laid there exhausted, but I bet you didn't get much sleep that night.
No, I didn't get much sleep that night. I didn't. No, we were kind of just like in contentment, you know, a state of contentment, like, man, we did it. Like, you know, let's go have some fun. Like, you know, we didn't party too hard. We just kind of really talked about it. Because when after the Super Bowl, you didn't really talk about the game. You're just so excited. You're celebrating. But it didn't really sink in for us, for me, until I started talking about it, the little nuances about the game. Like, I remember Charlie Pepper, he got hit in the groin one play. We were laughing about that. I think me and another teammate, we were arguing about who was going to go on punt team because they were so exhausted. You know, to go down on punt team and play defense. And so just the physical toll that it took, you know, we were just laughing about it just because in that moment, you don't really think too much. You're just going out there and you're doing it. But when you go back there and you kind of reflect on about the game, that's when it kind of sinks in for you and you start to have, you know, the jokes and the laughs and the memories start to sink in a little bit more.
Just you mentioned, you're talking about the punting side of things, but when I was looking for a bit of information on you, and I came across a thing that you've been described as a kickoff and punt return ace who was highly rated in special teams. I mean, we're here talking about cornerback and stuff, but you were good in the special teams as well.
Yep. Yeah. So we definitely, I definitely took a lot of pride in the special teams. It definitely helped solidify a lot of value to my position, to my, again, to just my longevity within the NFL. knowing that a lot of people didn't want to take on that role. They kind of, right, like some, like I think someone, I think you touched on about divas, you know, they wanted to be the diva and be the guy. And I definitely feel that that was something that they were like, hey, Jerry, if you want to have some longevity, I think special teams is definitely your ticket. And so I was definitely a role that I embraced and wanted to do. And that was, you know, that was reward. You know, I wouldn't take it back for the world. I think being a special teams player was one of the best things I could be. And just embracing that role and doing the best of my ability, knowing that not too many people could do what I do. And it made a great living. Made a great living doing it. And it got me a Super Bowl. It got me a chance to play with some of the great elite athletes. And as well, I got to play defensive back. It wasn't the only position I played. It was just the position where it seemed that where I was able to make a name for myself and create some longevity and value for myself. And as well as just add some versatility. I think for having the versatility, knowing that you can play different positions and plug in, was crucial, was huge. Because, I mean, if you only play one position, they can find somebody else to play one position. But if you play multiple positions, it seemed to, right, it expanded your versatility and your value. So it made it harder for you, for them to get rid of you.
That's one way of looking at it. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so I was like, shoot, okay. Like, okay, they got one guy, he could do this, but I can do this, 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 and this, and this. So, and I'm so thankful that they cross-trained me and was able to give me a lot more value and just able to plug in, be a plug-in defender and knowing that I could play any position and step in and help my team win.
Did your life change after winning the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think it did. Yeah, I mean, because you will forever be known as a Super Bowl champ. And, you know, a lot of people, they talk about, I remember when I was signing autographs, he was like, you know, he was like, son, I want you to take this moment in, because I don't know the next time that you'll run into a Super Bowl champion. And you look at, I believe we're at Super Bowl 55 or so. I'm not sure what number of Super Bowl this is, but if you think every Super Bowl team, there's been 50 so odd teams that win the Super Bowl with 53 man roster. And whatever the population of the nation is, you got to take that population. And that's a fine number of people who have won a Super Bowl. And so if you look at, right, if you look at the nation or if you look at the world, that's a very small number. And so, yeah, there are very few. And, you know, that's something that no one can ever take away from you. And just like,
because you're one of them.
Yeah, I'm one of them. So, yeah.
But I think going to that, it's a very small amount of people actually make the NFL from how many start in college. So then, like you say, end up actually a Super Bowl winner. So it gets smaller as it goes along.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, it's definitely something to cherish. It's definitely something to leverage, and you know, again, just being blessed, you know, just to inspire people and encourage people to achieve their goals, to achieve their moments, and that's something that I definitely trying to catapult my business in speaking as well as an athlete, as well as helping people achieve their lifelong dreams. And as well as personal goals. So that's something that I definitely try to encourage and try to speak life into people. Because it seems like everybody is trying to set a goal. Everybody wants to hit a goal, especially in the world today, whether it's personal, whether it's financially, whether it's weight, you know, weight loss, or just in general. And so that's what I love to do and try to create my own ripple effect, you know, and just helping people and inspire and just motivate, you know, that I'm Jarrett Bush, the motivator. And, I sit down with a ton of people just to help them kind of get on the right track and kind of just help them take those action steps towards their goals and build some momentum, as well as develop some reasons, you know, just like in the Bible, it talks about when Moses had his rod and his staff, you know, what are your reasons? You know, finding those reasons will help you take care or just help you propel yourself through some of those hardships and some of those trials and tribulations towards your goals.
Obviously, you mentioned there, Jared, so obviously since retiring, you've moved into, obviously, you've got your own motivational speaking business and obviously reaches out places. In the last year of everything with the pandemic and stuff, and the changes and how America's changed with the pandemic, the new election, everything, have you seen more demanding, more people needing help and that guidance of more motivational help?
I definitely have, just because, especially, right, just in this pandemic, people are taking unemployment versus actually going to work, you know, and I think they're in a sense of struggling because they know that, right, that's the burden hand, is that unemployment check. And hopefully, you know, it's not meant to stay on employment, but it's kind of supposed to help you kind of get back on your feet so you can elevate yourself back up. And so hopefully, you know, yeah, I have been getting a lot more emails and just people who reach out who just need to, you know, maybe just like one-on-one or maybe like a group of three or five, you know, or, you know, sales teams who kind of just been hit, you know, really drastically. They've definitely brought me in, nonprofits to help, you know, hit a certain goal, for debt, right, for helping families with groceries or just helping maybe pay for like school supplies or even clothes for kids. And so that's what a lot of people reach out for me, and just to help, you know, raise funds, you know, kind of just connect and kind of just hit that, you know, stroke the emotions of this is what we're trying to do. This is the goal. This is why we're here. And, you know, try to tell a lot of my stories that connect with people in the sense of that are privileged with the resources that are able to help.
Is it something you just fell into, or is it something you one day you woke up and thought, I'm going to be a motivational speaker?
No, it's definitely something I fell into. It definitely wasn't something that I just woke up. I'm dead serious. Like it's people just kept asking me to do it. You know, like, hey, can you come just talk to this high school? Can you talk to this youth group? Can you come talk to the Boys and Girls Club? Can you come talk to the Big Sisters and Big Brothers Club? And I was thinking to myself, okay, so how can I make this thing official? You know, so me and my lady, we put ourselves a brand and got a logo, you know, started developing some of the marketing tools and was able to start monetizing in a way that, you know, that people will start able to kind of just email me and kind of book me on a month-to-month or week-to-week basis, and I'm able to check in and see how they're doing, you know, see if they're progressing towards their goals, and kind of like an accountability person to see like what they're doing, how they're doing it, well, are they checking the boxes of the same directions of how they want to go about their goals, or what steps are they taking towards their goals. I think that's really the biggest thing, and just keeping them on track, right? I feel like a lot of people like lose the motivation, right? Right. Let's take example, New Year's Day, right? The weight loss, right? The New Year's resolution. Everybody wants to go buy a gym membership, you know? And so I think a lot of people, they set too big a goal, you know, and for a lot of times, right, they feel like they're not worthy of that goal. And so I really kind of dive deep into like what they're really wanting and why they're wanting it. And that's so that I can kind of just pour out my help and my motivation, my inspiration. Because once I understand what their why is, I'm like, okay, this person really cares. I really care. Now, if this person really doesn't really care about what they're doing, maybe I'm not the right person for them, you know. But I try to find out people who really want who really care about themselves and really care about their goals, so that I can better put forth my full effort and helping them reach their goals. And I have to sit down and talk to them and kind of dig a little deeper about, you know, what they're wanting and what their goal is and why they want it. So it's a lot of fun for me, just because you get to know people, you get to connect, engage, and help people ultimately, you know, people who are actually struggling, people who, you know, who need some help, people who have a ton of resources and people who don't have any resources. So it's a very wide range of people that I help. Just because I just want to help, I care, and I love to inspire.
It must be quite rewarding to feel that you're giving something back after you've had a successful career in the NFL.
Yeah. Oh, hugely fulfilling. It just makes you feel good, and especially when they email you about testimony, like a woman who couldn't get pregnant because her stress levels or nutrition wasn't right, or, you know, maybe a husband who just had a drinking issue and now is like starting to work out more and he's on a better track, or it's a kid who wanted to get faster. He was a bit overweight and now he slimmed down and now he's on his way to, you know, just a better high school career. And he's, you know, he's looking towards a college career now. And those are some of the stories that you love to hear. And it just makes you feel so good that you were just able to make an impact and ultimately within your community. And that I think that's what I love to do. You know, I think that, and that's your testimony. That is your impact. And it doesn't matter if you help 50 million people or if you help 3 or 5 people, because to that 3 to 5 people, you made a difference.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter if you helped 50,000 people or 10, if you help 10 people dramatically and you change the course of their lives to a better path. I mean, that's what life's all about. Right. That's what life's all about. So yeah,
definitely.
Richard.
Yes, Charles.
Well, you were going to come in with a question. I was going to ask something, but
no, go ahead.
I'll ask away then. I'll just you're in there like Flint. So when did you realize, or what, you know, what was the process when you're realizing that your career with the Packers is coming to an end? What did you look at doing, or how did things map out?
How things panned out. So I had excruciating pain. I ended up with a sports hernia, and it was something that was progressive, but wasn't something that was acute and that was like direct pain that happened on the field at like one moment. It was progressive. It happened over years. And there just came to my ninth year, my final year. And there's this, it was hard for me to just even get up in the morning and each and every day. And, you know, I manned up a lot of it and sucked it up. And you know what? I was like, Jared, you got to finish this last year and whatever it takes. And so I finished up that ninth year. I had surgery. And I think I was pretty exhausted at that moment, you know, just having surgery and being wrapped up in all these bandages and being cut open. But I knew, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to let that stop me. This is not going to be my last hurrah. So I went and played in the Canadian Football League after I rehabbed and healed up down in Arizona. I played for a season there, and I ended up getting cut midseason. And I felt like that was my closure. I felt like that was my closure in the sense of knowing that I wanted to get back to where I was athletically, physically healthy, mentally, get back on the field. I didn't want to leave off the field right?
You didn't want to leave off the treatment room, did you?
Yeah.
To go back out and have your...
Right.
Dance, you know, into the sunset, as I say.
Yeah. Thank you. So, yeah, I didn't want to end like that, you know, coming off of surgery. And so once I had that closure, I definitely took some time to take care of my girls. My girls are now 7 and 5. They were 2 and 4 at the moment when I finished up, I believe. And took some time just to be a dad, you know, just to take a pause. And I think that was, again, one of the most rewarding, you know, aspects to all the hard work, was I get to kind of just pause and just be dad. You know, don't have to be anything more. Just be dad and be there and be engaged and, you know, change diapers and take them to like little soccer league games and, you know, and take them to the park and, you know, travel with them. And I think that was very fulfilling as well. And then, you know, as I start to get older, I started to get the itch to kind of get back into it. And the speaking business definitely, you know, came a knocking. You know, like I said, it's not something that I woke up wanting to do. It was just something that I kind of fell into. So
with you saying you wanted to get back into it, I was going to, one of the questions I was just thinking about asking you was, obviously, I don't know whether you missed the game or not, but have you ever thought about getting back into the actual game and maybe coaching or anything like that?
Yeah, I thought about it. You know, I did a coaching internship, and it definitely seemed something that I wanted to do. I think the time demand for coaching in college and as well as the NFL ranks are hugely committed. You know, there's a huge commitment to that. You know, waking up at 6 and then going home at 10 a.m., 10 p.m., I think your kids only grow up once, and I wanted to be there for my kids. And so that was kind of just the option that I took, is, you know, just being a dad and having 2 little girls, I wanted to be there. And I just value being a father, I guess, more than an NFL coach, I guess. And maybe when I get older, maybe that's something that I can do down the road. But as of now, you know, with my kids being so young, I definitely want to be there, you know.
Oh, that's great. But you've definitely got, you know, that is great. But yeah, you've got time. I'm forgetting you because I'm an old man. You've got time on your side still.
Yeah, I definitely get some questions asked to do some volunteer positioning coaching. And I do some speed coaching as well, speed and agility coaching for kids. So I definitely have that itch to coach. I think just making sure that my time, you know, and flexibility definitely goes towards my kids is definitely a priority.
But you still follow the game, I take it.
Yeah, Yeah, I definitely follow the game. I wouldn't be upset with doing some sports commentary as well. I definitely feel that there's a niche there as well, just understanding and knowing the finer details of what the game brings and being inside the game and understanding like the little nuances, the intricacies of the game and the schematics, as well as what the player is thinking versus the coaches and what the GMs are thinking and understanding like how that all plays a role. And so it's a lot of fun, you know, talking football is, you know, as a football player, right? That's just what we do. You know, we could do that night and day.
Do it with your eyes shut.
yeah. Right. So, yeah, if that were to come down the pipe too, I would love to, you know, kind of jump into that as well. But right now I definitely, the motivational speaking takes a lot of my time and, maybe down the road, you know, I can jump into the sports casting.
Next time I'm speaking to Matt LaFleur, I'll put a good word in for you.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I appreciate that.
He'll say who?
Yeah, right?
Who me, not who you.
That's when he unblocks you, Charles, from all the previous attempts to get through to him.
Yeah.
So, obviously, following the game still, Jarrett, how do you think Green Bay have been and going into this year? Obviously, very close last two seasons. Are they almost Super Bowl ready again? And is it all hinging on potentially what's going on with Aaron at the moment?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. With Aaron, it's tough to watch. It's tough to watch. I hope everything can get back to what was what and what is still is. And I think Aaron Rodgers is frustrated. He definitely wants another Super Bowl. So does the Packers. The Packers won another Super Bowl. I think the franchise, that kind of sum it up, the gist of it, is, you know, I think we can dive into it. We can talk about it until midnight.
And we'd still be not clear.
Right. So the Packers are looking out for the franchise and the Super Bowl. Aaron's looking out for the Super Bowl. Does that make sense? So, right?
Yeah.
So the franchise is looking out for the draft picks to take the reins as soon as A-Rod kind of, you know.
Aaron's looking at the clock, isn't he? His playing career.
Right.
Left.
Right. And so A-Rod's looking at, like, right now. Let's go win right now. Like, can I get some pieces to win? If you're not helping me get the pieces to go win, well, I got to go somewhere else. And yeah, I know that sounds fair, but I got to do what's best for me in my career and want to go win the Super Bowl. Now, it's kind of upsetting because the Packers aren't willing to cooperate with Aaron and understanding, like, hey, we want to win the Super Bowl too. And so that's where I'm kind of confused on, like, what's the communication like? Like, why are you guys not helping this guy go win the Super Bowl? That's what he wants. Why are you guys not, like, helping massage that relationship to help win the Super Bowl? Because that's ultimately what you want, too. You're just looking out for the future of the franchise as well, so that when A-Rod does, or if he gets hurt, you guys are able to pass the reins over to the next guy. And that's where I feel like there's some miscommunication, or it just, you know, they're not willing to help him out, or they're not willing to listen into giving him the pieces that he needs to go win the Super Bowl, just like Tom Brady. And I think A-Rod should be some humility in A-Rod as well. I think it's tough right now for him because he sees how Tom Brady's winning. He went to Tampa Bay. He got all the pieces that he wanted. He was like, Gronk, sign Gronk. He was like, let's sign Leonard Fournette. Let's sign
Antonio
Brown, and let's go win. And he won. So A-Rod's like, why can't I do it? Why can't I do it? If he can go do it, why can't I do it? And I think, you know, everybody has their own path. You know, sometimes, you know, you can't do what Tom Brady does. You got to only do what A-Rod does. You got to do how A-Rod does it, not what Tom Brady did. Yes, a lot of people try to copy what they do, and they try to think that that's the blueprint. That's the blueprint for success. You go in there, you go in the front office, you tell them what to do, and you get it, and you go win. Well, that's not how Green Bay does it. And I think that's where he's hitting that roadblock, right? And that's where they're clashing. And that's where it's like, well, okay, you don't want to give me what I want, like Tom Brady did. Fine, I'm gonna find somebody who's gonna give me that.
I wonder how much of what happened with Tom Brady when he went to the Bucs is playing on Rodgers' mind, which perhaps it wouldn't have been if Tampa Bay hadn't won the Super Bowl this season.
Say that one more time.
Yeah. So I've confused myself over this one. So Tom Brady left the Pats, went to the Bucs, and straight away won a Super Bowl with a brand new team.
Yeah.
Now, if that hadn't have happened, Rodgers would have probably been quite happy staying at Green Bay. But he's now seen somebody who can go from one team to another and immediately win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And he went to a team what Tampa weren't really setting the world alight before Tom Brady got there.
Yeah, and they weren't even the playoff team when Tom Brady got there. And turn around and Super Bowl contender.
So can Rodgers do that?
It seems possible. I mean, if you get the right GM who's willing to work with you, seems like it. You know, so it's like, you know, Tom, again, if you have a willing GM that's willing to work with you, I think John Elway, I think he's a former quarterback. He understands that you need pieces as well as you need somebody, you need some collaboration, you need help. You can't do it by yourself. So he needs the help to do that. And I think John Elway is giving him the opportunity to go do it. And more power to him, man. You can't knock somebody who's trying to piece together a championship. It's almost a sense of the NBA where they get that, right? They get these super players and they get this kind of just recruit players, just like what, like the Cavaliers, Los Angeles Lakers now.
Brooklyn Nets are doing it as well, aren't they?
Yeah, the Brooklyn Nets, where the Kevin Durant, James Harden. I just saw James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and I think there's one more. Yeah, so it seems that the NFL and the professional teams are turning into these super teams to go win. And that's just the nature of the beast now, you know, and you need help. You need help. You need front office help. You need player help. And you need the coaches to go win Super Bowl. So
I think one of Rodgers' greatest assets or facets is this ability to make decisions on the fly. And I think one of the big problems with the Bucs game was that you saw that he was almost having his wings clipped. And he wasn't able to make the decisions he wanted to make. And I think that's a lot of what's been carried over into why he's thinking of looking elsewhere, because he's fed up getting his wings clipped.
Correct. Yeah. And a little bit of diva. I think he didn't get what he wanted.
Yeah.
Or he didn't get the receivers that he wanted, or he didn't get some of the positions that he wanted, you know. But I think he's just got to be more aware of, like this is how the Packers do things, you know. You know, that every franchise is going to work like Tampa, you know, like, right? It seemed like Tom Brady had to move himself, right, to Tampa to be able to do that, to get the pieces that he wanted. And so that's what, you know, he's having to do, make a sacrifice. You have to sacrifice for some of the blessings that you want or some of the goals that you want to hit. And ultimately, that's a sacrifice he's willing to do. He's willing to sacrifice the relationship, or not sacrifice, but kind of just, okay, you know, end the career, you know, upwinding in an NFC championship. It's 16 golden years here at Green Bay. We had a great run. You know, you guys are thank you for the wonderful opportunity, you know, to play here at the Green Bay Packers in the frozen tundra, title town, once in a lifetime opportunity. And tie the knot, tie the bow, you know, and move on to the next team, you know.
Don't leave it messy in New York. Yeah. Just do it, like you say, amicably.
Yeah, right. And so, and people will be heartfelt and just like, oh, okay, he's very thankful. Like, he has to do what he has to do, you know, as, you know, wants to win the Super Bowl. And they might have their opinion of, like, he should have stayed and, you know, we want him here and this and that. But ultimately, he's A-Rod. He's got to make a decision for him and his career. So, and, you know, I think a lot of people will definitely be a lot more genuinely appreciative of his leaving versus kind of disappointed or disgruntled.
You know? So what does Super Bowl 45 winner Jarrett Bush think is going to happen? Is he going to stay or is he going to go? Put you on the spot. What do you think? You don't have to answer.
July, I think. since it's still May, he can make the move. I think you go. If you're gonna go, you gotta go now. Yeah. You gotta get in with the organization, understand, right? Go through the OTAs, go to the right through the mini camps. You can't let it linger. Mm-mm. If you're gonna move, you gotta go now. So you can get in and understand the organization, how they work, get the pieces that you need, go through training camp and do all that.
Learn the playbooks. You've got to go now, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then, right, you got to build chemistry with the team. Like, you got to go now. If there's any type of wait, he's going to stay.
It's funny, when I asked you that question, you went really quiet for a long time.
Yeah.
If people are watching the video of this, they'll see that they'll see that you're thinking about it. If they're listening to the podcast, they'll think you've gone home.
Well, I've always thought, like, any indecision, you pause. If there's any type of emotion, you pause, you know?
It just made me chuckle. That was all.
Yeah. And so I definitely, I'm a firm believer, like, if he's going to go, he's got to go soon, you know? If there's another 2 months that goes by, he'll stay.
It's interesting because, you know, we're not hearing anything at the moment, and it's nice to speak to someone who knows a little bit more than we do, or probably a lot more than what we do, to hear your thoughts on it, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
Because if he was a football player over here, the media, I mean, it's probably the same over there, but the media would be going wild, and it'd be headline news every day, you know, is he staying, is he going? And yet, nothing's been said about it, really. It's all very quiet.
Yeah. Well, they also said that they won't trade him either. So it's like, okay, you won't trade me. Well, I guess I gotta stay, you know, type deal. So he wants to trade, and so they won't trade him. So I think ultimately he'll stay. So
it's good to have these stories in the close season as well, because there's not so much happening. So you want a few big stories for doing the rounds. Give us something to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm talking about. But yeah, obviously, Jarrett, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I just want to ask one more question. If you can take anything from your time in the career, what would it be? It doesn't have to be a Super Bowl win. It could be anything. What do you look back at as like, yeah, I like that moment?
As one, just one moment?
Just one moment, yeah. It doesn't have to be a Super Bowl. It can be any moment. What you look back on.
I think probably the walk-off interception against, it was 2012 against the Falcons. And it was snowing, and the Falcons came in the Lambeau, and it was two-minute drill. And I think we were up. I forget the score. I knew we were up by... They needed a touchdown to win, a field goal to tie it, and they're trying to get in the field goal position, and it was about 20 degrees or so, and Matt Ryan threw a corner route, and I jumped the corner, and he threw it as a laser versus like giving it some loft, and I jumped it, and when the clock hit zero, or I think it was maybe like 30 seconds left, and I jumped it and picked off. And walked off the field on that interception to solidify our team going to the playoffs, because we were close and not even going. And that win solidified that playoff berth. And I think that was just a wonderful feeling, man, just to change the moment, change the momentum, and bring so much electricity to Lambeau Field on that end was like, you did it, man. Like, you did it. Yeah, you came through. Like, you were held accountable, and you came through for your teammates and as well as the team. And it just makes you feel good, man. There's nothing like it. Like, when you come through and someone's counting on you and someone's relying on you, and, you know, you're there. You come through. And I think that's one of the biggest moments that I take from my career, because I gave it to my daughter when I came home, because I told her the day of, I was like, I'm gonna get a pick for you, okay? And she was like, okay. And I held on to that ball until I got home, and I was able to pick her up, man. And that's those moments that, man, you can never just take for granted, man. And you always cherish it. So I think that's a moment that I definitely will hold on to.
Yeah, let's not forget, 20 degrees in America is pretty cold.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah, because you are Fahrenheit, which we used to have, but we're now Celsius. So 20 degrees Celsius over here is pretty warm. That's a nice summer for us. So when you say 20 degrees, everyone over here, you think, oh, it's not so bad. But 20 degrees Fahrenheit, it's cold.
Yeah, that's right. You got Celsius, huh?
Yeah.
What's the temperature there?
We're probably about 20 degrees Celsius at the moment, which is about, roughly, it's about 70 degrees.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's nice, but it won't last.
No, it never lasts.
We can, as Brits, we can talk about the weather all day long. So just we'll leave it at that.
Okay. Well, on behalf of myself, Charles, and the First Down Snapcast, Jarrett, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on tonight. And hopefully at some point we can hook up with you again.
Yeah, definitely. If you guys could shoot me a piece of the segment too, that'd be great, through the email.
Yeah, I'll send you something. Yeah.
Awesome. Appreciate it, Richard. Thanks for reaching out.
Thanks, Jarrett.
Yeah. I appreciate
Cheers.
It. Charles. Cheers.
All Thank right. you. It's been good. Right. Thanks for the light. Bye.
All right. Take care.
Podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.